everyone. I'm Haley Allam, and this is Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you're a parent new to Luxembourg, then this is the podcast for you. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Hi, Christos. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the invitation.
Very excited to have you here as someone who grew up a digital native. I grew up when Facebook came out. I had just graduated college. So that means that I grew up my whole life analog and then moved in. And as an elder millennial, social media has played a massive role in my life. I also used to work for Facebook, full disclosure. But also, I really care about social media because of my kids and raising kids today in this world where it's basically proven to give them depression, anxiety, video game addiction. Can we blame that on social media? And then also just rifts in our society. So I'm very excited to have you here today.
Thank you. It's so lovely to hear you introduce the theme the way you just did, because I'm in the process of, as I was just telling you before we started recording, of rewriting a pitch for a very big presentation that I'm about to give. And it's exactly that narrative.
Oh, great.
It's exactly that. From the social perspective, it's exactly that narrative of what has happened.
So the show will definitely focus on your personal why. However, in case you haven't listened to all my episodes, because you're not a mom in Luxembourg, I start all my shows the same, which is tell me your Luxembourger story. So how long have you been here? Why did you come? How did it start? How's it going? Do you like living here, et cetera?
I've been here my entire life. I was born in Athens in 93, and I moved here in 94. Without a name. When I moved here, I didn't have a name. My passport just says my last name and just no first name.
Your parents couldn't figure it out for a year?
I think they had figured it out, but the passport didn't have it because it wasn't official. I hadn't been christened yet.
Oh, okay.
In Greece at the time, I suppose you had to be christened before the passport could actually indicate the name. But very much like you, my mother followed my father here.
Trailing spouse.
I grew up here in an era where Luxembourg was filled with hope. Everything was getting better. Everything was getting shinier.
And schwarz du Luxembourgisch?
Schwarz ganz gut Luxembourgisch.
Nice. I'm in A1. So that's like as
congratulations.
Far as I can go.
Congratulations for starting.
Thank you. Yes. Another one of my episodes coming out probably before yours is how to get the passport, because that's also something that my demographic is wanting.
Super.
So you loved growing up here?
Absolutely.
And
we loved it.
Did you stay here for university?
Not quite. I left for about 10 years. I went to the UK. Then I came back to do my master's here.
And your master's is in?
Architecture.
What I know about you, I think you're political. You've been quite involved in politics, and now you're starting a Meta direct competitor. And
yeah, it's very nice of you to say that we would be directly competing with Meta from the beginning. But yes, no, I'm an architect by training. So I did architecture in the UK and architecture here with acting in the middle. So I trained as an actor for 3 years at a British drama school.
Wow. You're all over the map.
I was lucky enough to have the opportunities to try the things that I was interested in. And then coming back to Luxembourg, indeed, I got interested in putting my knowledge to work. Even training as an architect, the idea was always, I want to be an architect so I can contribute to my city, because Luxembourg in the 90s, going back to your first question, was constantly under construction, much like it is today, because it's a country in constant evolution. So I thought, if I want to contribute to that, I have to be an architect. And coming back here, I realized the main issue was not just what we're going to build and how we're going to build it, but it was political, about who gets included in the decision-making of what we're going to build and how we're going to structure a society. So inevitably, I got involved in politics with a little time here at RTL for a while.
What did you do here at RTL?
I was part of the radio team and part of the web team as well.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you.
That was really interesting about who gets a seat at the table helping you build. And does that have to do with your personal why? Actually, I suppose we should start with, take it from the top, assuming that you're listening to this and you know absolutely nothing about your project. We were debating before we started recording. It's pronounced Monet, but if you speak English natively, it looks like Monet.
Yep.
My husband said money.
I love it. The more people that are trying to pronounce it, the better.
Okay. So what is it in your words?
It's a social media network that is actually social, that wants to empower people to connect with their friends and share photos, videos, moments with their friends, rather than competing in a sea of content within mainstream social media. And it's a platform that wants to rewrite the rules of what we consider normal in social media. big tech social has normalized constant surveillance and profiling people for every minute that they spend on social networks. And we're saying people shouldn't be treated as users on social media networks. Rather, we should be treated as human beings who are participating in a space and purchase a service, and that service being social media.
So does that mean your service is going to cost money?
Ideally, yes. Ideally, it's going to be subscription-based, or there's going to be an opt-out with advertising that is non-targeted. So we plan to build an advertising platform until June 2027 that will operate much like television advertising or bus stop advertising, which is non-targeted.
That's not exactly true, but...
It is targeted to a demographic, but not to the specific person that is actually consuming the ad.
Yes. Although technically social media is not supposed to be targeted to the specific person either.
Well, yes. Yes. And then we enter the whole debate of what big tech has actually achieved and not.
Yeah. To go back to your personal why about this, is it because you think that it's bad for humans to be used for profits for the big tech people? Why?
I think it's beyond my own personal why. I believe social media was sold to us as a public square. Unfortunately, it became a big private mall. We normalized American advertising culture across the globe with social media. In Europe, we have very specific laws that protect us against constant advertising. They protected us on print media, they protected us on television, and then we lost control with social media because Europe has not developed its own social media networks. So whatever came out of Silicon Valley and then eventually out of Shenzhen became the norm. And I think Europe at the moment has the opportunity to create a new norm. And now is the moment. If I was building this 2 years ago, I would say I'm dead in the water from the start. But right now there is a huge appetite for an alternative. And the appetite comes both in Europe, but majorly out of the United States.
Because people are so sick of the division?
Yeah, first of all, that's one point. Unless you're listening to what some people on the right of the right are saying, even here in Luxembourg, about whether or not some people are manipulating us with their social media platforms, that's absolutely clear. But what's happening in the United States that I didn't expect, honestly, half our early adopters are actually Americans, is the ICE raids. People are becoming fully aware that their social media is being tracked and targeted, and people are getting picked off the street because of what they're saying or who they're associated with on social media.
That's official. That's happening. ICE is surveilling.
It certainly looks like it, and it walks like a duck. It quacks like a duck. It's probably a duck. When you see what's happening, yeah, it makes sense that people are getting scared. In Germany as well, by the way, it's not just about America. It's in Germany, it's happening. People who have certain views on what's happening in the Middle East are getting raided, their homes emptied and checked for by the German police.
Wow.
Yeah, the idea that our social media is not tracked is naive. And I think the work of Carol Cadwalader over the years has been instrumental in awakening in us an understanding of what big tech is doing. We saw the results, the very tangible, let's say, the ones that we were able to understand during Brexit and with Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, and today, what was it? It was just a few months ago, but with all the madness of the current White House, it's really difficult to remember things. Mm-hmm. But it was just earlier this year that the top CTOs of American tech companies officially became members of the U.S. military. So in essence, we are letting the people who set the rules for how the world connects are part of the American military-industrial complex. That can't be right for everyone.
As an American, I'm going back soon for my high school reunion.
Amazing. 10 years since she's finished high school.
That's cute that you think that's cute. No, it's 25. Do I delete my social media apps? Do I leave my phone here? What am I doing? And I'm not even like that critical. I guess we were taught liberty and justice for all. The idea that you would stand up for that when you see that's not happening should be an American value. Your personal why is really more like a big archetype hero why of I want to stop this.
I got tired of being a hypocrite. I'm not a hero. I just got really tired of being involved in politics and telling everyone, hey, we should do that. But okay, who's going to do it? And in the United States, it's incredibly inspiring, actually, to see that in the United States, when there's a problem, it seems like many people try to solve it. And in Europe, when there's a problem, we get very good at writing a lot of reports. That's what we do. And I said, no, last year at the invitation of the State Department, I found myself, this time last year, actually, I found myself in the United States touring America.
At the invitation of the State Department?
Yeah, so the State Department runs these incredible programs called International Visitor Leadership Program. They invite people from all around the world to, let's call it, it's a soft power exercise from the United States. And mine was focused on NATO and the NATO alliance. So I found myself this time last year, just a couple of days before the US election of 2024, in the United States with 31 people across the alliance, plus all of the Americans that were there representing the United States and presenting to us the history and functioning of the US government and the US military and the NATO alliance. And obviously, outside of these meetings, we found ourselves talking about our individual countries and what's happening in Europe. And we all agreed that Europe needs to have its own social media networks. How come we're here at RTL? Why does Luxembourg have its own television? It's a tiny country. It's because we like to be able to report on local news, and we like to be able to set our own rules about what gets reported, what doesn't, and what's important and what isn't. In Europe, there is this notion, and I think in the United States as well, I'm just talking about Europe as a European here, that media plurality is a good thing. And so why have we accepted this oligopoly, near monopoly, of social media networks when more and more young people are actually getting their news, their information, and their sense of self from these social networks? Mm-hmm. We know, and that is, we know that. We know, we found out, again, months ago, that when a young girl deletes a selfie, she gets profiled by Facebook and Instagram because she becomes a more interesting target for beauty products. What is that creating? It creates a sense of, okay, if I delete a selfie because I already felt insecure about myself, then I'm a prime target for beauty products, which means that I will feel even more insecure because I will now see the optimal or the best or whoever looks better than me, and I would be sold that. It's mind-blowing what surveillance advertising has created, and we're simply trying to create an alternative to that.
That's really interesting, the word surveillance advertising, because in my line of work, we would call that targeted advertising.
But that's why Americans are so good at marketing, because you would call it targeted advertising when essentially it's...
In this particular instance, it's like a nefarious targeting, right? So you're targeting this girl who feels bad about herself as being ugly, and now she's a prime candidate.
But I actually mean that as a compliment to American advertising, because I think out of the US also came the naming of targeting data collection as cookies. Why do we go on a website and accept cookies? What the hell are cookies? No one's getting any cookies. They are...
The developers are getting the cookies.
But what are cookies? They're insane amounts of data that are collected on your personal experiences while you're browsing. But then someone in Silicon Valley had the brilliant idea of calling them cookies. Who's going to say no to cookies?
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I want to say that there are plenty of people, like you said, half of the alpha test are Americans. There is a lot of people, I think, globally, who are fed up with the major platforms, but also everybody's on them. The global penetration rate is like 90 something or whatever. So if you want to reach people, so my humble podcast, I want to reach people who live in Luxembourg, this is the way to do it. How is your platform going to be different? Is it really just so that I keep in touch with Jen from back home and her kids, and it's truly that private? And then if I am a small business, how am I going to reach all the people here?
Excellent question. And I think I need to answer it in two sections. One of them is about being discovered. And the other one is about your connection to your audience. Obviously, as a new social network, our graph is much smaller, which means that it will take longer for people to actually adopt our platform so that you can actually grow your audience. But the big advantage of our platform is that we say from day one, you own your subscription. So you own the audience that you create. If you have 100,000 followers on a big tech social platform, an algorithm will determine if your content each time is interesting enough to actually engage the person consuming it, because they're only interested in how long that person is going to spend on their platform. It doesn't matter if someone subscribed to you. It doesn't matter if you're the New York Times. If I go and buy a subscription to the New York Times, I know it will always arrive on my inbox, mm-hmm. will always arrive on my door if I want the physical paper. If I subscribe to the New York Times on Instagram, if the algorithm determines that the content that the New York Times has published will engage me and make me spend more time on the platform, then it will show it to me. But if you actually click follow on Instagram, you're not necessarily going to be served that content.
And on your platform, you will.
Yeah. We say, and this is what I want to announce in Lisbon, we are going to call it the world's best algorithm, which is just human choice. Let's say you do a show targeted mothers in Luxembourg and generally the expat community in Luxembourg, right? That is your brand. And I want to follow your show. Obviously, Luxembourg is a very small place. This analogy might not work as well, but imagine there were 20 other people doing a show like yours. Big tech will recommend me content like yours, not necessarily yours. Why? I actually just want to see your things. Maybe I'm not interested in knowing what it's like to be an expat in Luxembourg. Maybe I'm specifically interested in your content and in your point of view. TikTok's algorithm is incredibly addictive. And because big tech social media out of the United States had to compete in this market, unfortunately, they very clearly copied that mechanism from TikTok as well. We've normalized these feeds that get us addicted to scrolling. Most of us don't even realize how much time we've spent every morning before we get up. To build our social media platform is going to be a challenge, obviously. There are financial challenges, there are moderating challenges. But what we aim to do is create a new norm where we don't just recommend people billions of pieces of content based on how much engagement we can get out of them. It is detrimental to our health. And I can't imagine what it's like to be a young person on social media today, when we all know for a fact that they wake up, the first thing they do is they go on social media and they will see pictures of war. They will see kids their age being blown to pieces in some totally different part of the world. And then they will see an outfit check from a young influencer who's going to tell them what to wear to school that day. And then it will be back to some terrible news and then back to an outfit check. And this is happening to them every day.
This is what happens to me. I'm a grown-up. That what you just described my feed, right? Except I make rules that I don't go on first thing in the morning. But how is your platform going to be different for kids? And then I know you said 16 is the lowest limit of allowing anybody on. But do you know how easy it is for a 16-year-old to have a Finsta and get around parental controls?
Absolutely. That is entirely possible. And then the European Union is trying to introduce or is introducing this EUID. I don't know yet what's worse, being able to verify absolutely everyone's real identity online. EUID essentially links a wallet, it links your ID, it's a common ID for you to log in everywhere. So it's...
That sounds scary.
It sounds very scary, actually. And this is why we absolutely oppose chat control to start with. In the name of protecting children online, Denmark's contribution to EU regulation wants to be the ability of states to read everyone's private messages constantly, being able to read everyone's messages without needing any approval. And that's super scary.
How is that freedom?
Oh, that's absolutely not freedom. This is the scary part. This is absolute totalitarianism.
Is this like far-right Denmark Party or something?
No, that's the worst part. It's not even the far right. Now they're blaming big tech for the opposition to chat control, which is insane. Chat control is very much something that big tech wants to have because big tech already listens to everything you're texting and they just want a loophole to make sure that they can continue. Come on, if you are on an end-to-end encrypted service on a big tech messaging platform, so that I don't actually name one, what does end-to-end encrypted mean in these platforms? It means it's encrypted between you, Jen, and the big tech platform that is reading all these messages, not actively, not the actual message, but an algorithm that's reading it to actually be able to serve you ads. Otherwise, these platforms would not be as profitable as they are. And they are very profitable.
That I'm aware of. Yeah.
And to answer just the question about how our platform's different is we're building a platform that if we manage to make it the way that we want to, will be human moderated and it will be treating human beings as human beings. And obviously, as I said, it's 16 plus now. At the moment for the alpha, we're actually only accepting adults. So even though we say it's 16 plus, you have to be an adult to join. We don't accept any birthdays under, essentially show us that a person is under 18 years old. And obviously it's a violation of our terms if you sign up with an incorrect birthday. And also we don't collect data. We don't collect data. We collect your first name, your birthday, and two more data points only to be able to legally report on GDPR requirements. But we're not going to be tracking who liked what, who shared what. Why has this been normalized? It's a genuine question, by the way. Why? Why has it been normalized that we are constantly profiled online?
I don't know why. It just happened. I don't think anyone sat down at the beginning of this, looking forward 25 years, and said, yeah, that's what I want. I think a lot of people shrug it off. But I also think it's addicting. If I'm a parent, do I let my kid go on your platform? No.
If you're a parent, you don't let your kids go on any platform. It's an awful thing to say, and I know that your kids will eventually go, so I could argue that if I were a parent, I'd rather my kids go on a platform like mine. Maybe I would like to make sure that they're not on mine. But social media are, they allow you to connect to anyone, anywhere in the world.
But that's good.
Yeah, when I was young, it was exciting. We were more naive and we didn't know. But now we know better. We know the dangers. We know the dangers of social media. Over 16 years old, I think 16 years of age is a good limit to
start it.
Yeah, before that, I don't know, send an email. You want to connect with someone in Japan? Do what we used to do. We used to send letters. I'm sure you used to do the same thing. Once a year, someone would come to school and be like, would you like to send random letters to that school in Japan or that school in the United States?
Yeah, but that's not the world anymore. My 8-year-old, 7-year-old FaceTimes with his buds in California and Texas.
Amazing. There's a difference between FaceTiming someone you know.
Yes.
And someone you've never met in your life who promises you to join the Illuminati.
Okay.
We've already had to moderate things like that.
Already?
Yeah, of course.
Wow. Okay, so when you say human moderated, yeah. I'm glad you asked. In the beginning, you have a little disclaimer that basically says, don't act like an asshole. There are actual humans moderating?
Only humans moderating.
This stuff?
Yeah. Only humans. And that right now it's us. We're a small team and all of us are taking turns moderating the platform because we think it's insane to let algorithms and visual large language models feed on people's content.
But how do you scale that? How do you scale this business?
Excellent questions. As we scale, we'll find out the best way to do this, but it's not impossible. It's not impossible. We are currently working on various technologies of our own that will allow us, with the help of people, to flag content. And we can have people that are essentially community moderators. We are looking at alternatives. And we're not the only ones, by the way. For a lot of the features that we're planning on implementing, we worked with some of the best researchers that have already been doing this research in the United States, the Pro-Social Design Network.
I was going to ask about Blue Sky. Blue Sky is a similar value proposition, isn't it?
I don't know. It was created by Jack Dorsey. And the last thing I remember is that he made a lot of money by selling out his public square to Elon Musk.
Okay, so just full disclosure, you're never going to sell this to some bro oligarch and make a bunch of money and get on your yacht.
We don't want that. We absolutely don't want that. And we wanted from the beginning, it was very funny, when we were creating the articles of association, I wanted to write in that in order to sell the company, we would have to go to the European Council and get their agreement. And you can't really write this down unless you actually have an agreement with the European Council, right? That they actually are willing to do that. But I hope that if we do grow, we can create a way for people to have direct and indirect control over what happens to this company. Social media networks are too important for society for any one person to have total influence over what happens on them. Which again puts me in the total opposite of some of the biggest funders of social media, which is why I know in 24 months from now, our platform might not exist because we might not find the funds. But Peter Thiel gave a lecture, I don't remember how many years ago it was, but you can find it online, where he was saying, we'll never be able to convince people to do X, Y, Z because they will never support what we're trying to do. Therefore, we need to build the technologies that will allow us to do it anyway without their consent. Big tech in the United States is not aligned with democratic values or freedom.
Okay, I understand that. But also, if you're just a regular user who's not really thinking about this, and you have one platform that's super addictive and really vying for your attention, and the other one that's come, go, like, how will you compete?
We're not for everyone. We are an alternative, not a competitor. We want to compete with Instagram, but we'll never be, I mean, unless we surprise the world and make it, we'll be an alternative. Bitcoin is worth how much today? Ethereum came second, and for many people, Ethereum is a more useful blockchain. There's an element of first mover advantage, and we're not first movers, we're not second movers, we're not third movers. My God, we're 20 years behind the relay race. We will never catch up, but we can still be an alternative. You don't have to have 3 billion people on your platform to provide a solution for those who want it. And at the same time, I think people are becoming more aware, and I think we've realized that we can't handle 5,000 connections on our social graph on Facebook. Monet is here to create a space for people, their friends, their communities. This is the difference. This is super interesting, actually, because this is the difference between what you're planning for and what you actually get. When we started building Monet, we thought, yeah, Instagram alternative, and basically just give people the same stuff as Instagram. I don't know when this will be published, but as of now, we've just opened our open alpha, and still full of bugs, still multiple issues. But what we're seeing is that we're not really a direct competitor even to other video and image first social media, because TikTok and Instagram at the moment cater to creators, the top creators, and most of us have become consumers of that content. I spoke with someone at Meta about a year ago, less than a year ago, after we announced that we were working on Project Monet. And she told me, you're building a social network. We're not a social network anymore. We run algorithmic recommendation engines. On Monet, people are coming and sharing pictures from their daily lives. People are posting videos from their workplace, their morning coffee again, things that we used to do. We wanted to share with our friends, but that got drowned out in the algorithm. We all only care about what Kim Kardashian is doing or the equivalent person that someone might be interested in, but we're not seeing what our friend Betty or James or Kate are doing anymore. And I think there is an opportunity to do that. As an exhibit A of what a terrible presenter I am, I completely forgot to mention that we're also swimming against the AI wave. So we want to ensure that our platform doesn't have AI-generated slop.
What is AI-generated slop? And how can you, as a person on your platform or a person in any platform, avoid it?
The second part of that question is very difficult to answer as AI becomes more and more difficult to spot. But the first part of the answer, which is what is AI slop? It's obviously AI-generated content that is just noise and cheap entertainment. It's a fake Jesus walking over water selling pizzas. And OpenAI built a social media network just for AI-generated videos. Again, I don't want to sit here, even though this is not a tech podcast, so I hope I'm not in danger of saying things that are wrong, but I don't know that we're going to develop the technology to spot every AI-generated video, but we don't want AI-generated videos. I've been playing around with Instagram's translation tools these days, and I sent my friend a video where I'm speaking in Hindi, a language that I don't speak, on Instagram. And I say, did I really just give the right to Instagram to replicate my face and voice across 150 languages that I don't speak, that I have no agency to know if what I'm saying is what I'm actually saying? So are there 150 versions of me speaking different languages that are far more powerful than the one version of me that really exists and speaks in English?
Is that how it works? When you make an AI video of yourself, you're giving that platform permission to use it forever and ever?
You're giving the platform permission to translate it and present it, but how do I know what's going to happen? How do I know when power is concentrated in so few people, they tend to abuse it? Have we all forgotten that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely? We used to be all taught that in, what was it, history class or literature class? I forget which one we covered it in. But we're living in challenging times, and I think the most hopeful thing one can do is not be overwhelmed by just how challenging times appear, but rather try to provide solutions and alternatives.
Good for you. Good for you. Is there anything else that you want English-speaking parents in Luxembourg to know about your platform?
I'm happy if they try it. I'm happy if they adopt it and make it their platform of choice. I don't think it's a convincing game. I'm just glad that some of them might have already tried it and give us a chance to develop a different version of what social media could be like.
Very cool. Christos, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you like the show, I'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to leave a comment, or better yet, share with another mom friend. And if there's a topic you'd like to see covered or you want to be on the show yourself, please email me at momlife@rtl.lu. And if you're feeling social, you can always reach me on Facebook and Instagram at Mom Life in Luxembourg. Thanks so much and have a great day.